1999, and
$394 until you apply it. Whatever. And we begin tonight, Masechet Sotah, Mem Dalet, we start with the Mishnah at the very bottom of the page. And tonight, of course, we'll first of all finish the chapter of Mashiach Chachoma, and then Mr. Shem will also get started on the final chapter, which is Egla Rufa. Okay. The Mishnah begins by going back again to the order in which the Torah itself presents, you know, the charge given, first by the Kohen, then by the Shotrim, and then it adds, you know, the Yoshua HaShotrim Medaber. And they start in to say, you know, whoever... Remember, the first, when the Kohen started, he gave words of encouragement in order to tell them, you know, that they're going out to fight, that God will be with them, and they should not be afraid. Okay. Then came the first mention of the Shotrim, and they were the ones, you know, who proclaimed, although according to another version that we had, the Kohen and the Shotrim together. That, let's say the Kohen said the words, and the Shotrim said it out loud, okay, that, you know, the who is excused from the battle, okay? And we saw, you know, the man who built a house and did not yet have a time to dedicate it, or he planted a vineyard, didn't have a chance, you know, to redeem it, or who betrothed a woman and did not have an opportunity to live with her as husband and wife, and we learned, you know, various things in that connection, if you remember. And then after that, we spoke about and those who don't even have to report for duty, right? But we also said that there are some who would not be excused in the first category. So this will be repeated again in the Mishnah tonight, okay? All right. So now the Yosva HaShotim and Davi Olam, right? They continue speaking unto the people. And what is the charge this time? This is about Miho Ish HaYarei V'Racha Levon, right? That whoever is fearful and is faint-hearted, then in that case, let him return home. So that the Lo Yimas is the Vadechov Shabbos, so that the hearts of his fellow Jews should not, you know, melt away as his heart has done. So now, the Mishnah again begins to qualify what is the meaning of this charge. Okay? So, Rabbi Akiva Omer, the first point of Rabbi Akiva, he says, "Hayorei v'racha leivov kemashma o." It means exactly or literally what what it says, namely a person who is afraid, he's a coward, he's faint-hearted, you know. When he,
what is the word for coward?
Coward? You can say the word that we use normally is pachdon.
Pachdon,
right? Somebody
fearful,
who
fearful.
Is pachad is fear, so a pachdon is a coward. Okay. She'enu yochol, and he gives an interpretation. A person who is afraid, she'enu yochol la'amod b'kishe milchama, he cannot stand taking part in an active battle. Liros cherev shegufo, to behold, for example, a sword which has been unsheathed, you know, ready to kill him, right? So obviously, if he can't do it, he can't do it. So he should go home. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, he has a different interpretation of Hayorei V'Racha Leivov. He says, who is Hayorei V'Racha Leivov? He says, Zehu HaMisiorei Min Ha'Averoi Shebiyodo. This is a person who suddenly realizes that he has sinned, and he's fearful because of the sins. You know, he figures that he'll be victim number one in the battle because of the fact that he's a sinner. So, L'tichach Tolsa Le'atera is called Eilu Sheyasa B'Klamat. This is the reason, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, that the Torah has tacked on, literally hung, has tacked on all those who already have been, you know, we said they can return, they can return home, you know, not stay in the army, with this general category that who is afraid, you know, Yorei V'Racha Leivov is afraid and is faint-hearted. In other words, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, whatever we've said before, you know, about the person who has built a house and so on and so forth, they're all good, valid reasons. But basically, it would seem that in this case, because they haven't, therefore they have fear in their hearts because right. they know that they're not going to enjoy the things that you know, they hope to enjoy.
Right. Not only that. Because of the fear, they shouldn't discourage the others.
Yeah, right, correct. Okay, so this is the opinion of Yossi Aglili, but as we see, essentially, there is now a difference of opinion between Rabbi Akiva, the literalist, right, the one who says coward is a coward, right?
What he's saying is right. that there's some people who have just faint heart, not right. because of any specific reason, but they're afraid of
death. Right, right. And well, that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion is that
that there are people who haven't consummated a marriage, or or lived in a house, and so forth.
Okay, fine. But essentially, he's stressing the fact that any person who is conscious of sin becomes a coward. He's conscious of his own sins, his own shortcomings, right? So he becomes a coward. This is the point that he's really stressing. Okay. Now we have a third opinion of a Rabbi Yossi, who is not to be confused with Rabbi Yossi Aglili. I mean, you can have two Moishes, you can have three Rubens, and so on and so forth. So,
we
have plenty of Yossis too.
How many years?
Right. So, Rabbi Yossi Omer, he says, Almon lekein gadol, gerusha v'chalutza lekein hedyot, mamzeres v'nisin l'Yisrael, and bas Yisrael v'mamzil, v'nisin harei hu hayarei v'rach alivah. All right. He says, you know who is a sinner? He is a sinner if he has defied the prohibitions of the Torah. The Torah prohibited what? Prohibited the Kohen Gadol from marrying a widow. And if the Kohen Gadol has gone ahead and married the widow, then in that case, he is a sinner. Okay? What else? If an ordinary Kohen marries either a divorcee or a woman has received chalitza, or a Yisrael, Kosher who, however, marries what? A Manzeres or an Asina, which we, of course, remember, explained time and again. This is a woman descended from the Givonim. Okay? Yeah. Or a Jewish girl, a Bas Yisrael, who is married to a Manzer or an Asin. So in either of these cases, then all of these categories would fall into the category of Yorei V'Rachaliva.
Why does he mention all five? Okay, these five categories are forbidden. But
right.
As far as Mechoma is concerned, the Kohen Gadol certainly doesn't get involved.
Correct.
The Kohen probably doesn't get involved neither.
We could also say that the Bas Yisrael probably too, who is married to the sin and so on and so forth.
The sin maybe.
Maybe.
Certainly not the Kohen Gadol.
However, I want to recall once more, what did we learn about this opinion? We learned that in this opinion, they do not go home.
But they're not.
They are not excused.
But they're not even called up. The Kohen Gadol is
question,
not called.
Yeah, correct. Okay, we're not arguing.
Well, there are times that there could be times when
the Kohen Gadol is not called.
Okay, but Arthur, we have to realize that there are such things as theory too.
Theory.
It's a theoretical situation. Okay, it may not be a practical one, but it's a theoretical situation. Since we're mentioning all these prohibited categories and so on. But we also learned previously that in that connection they are not excused. Why? Because we consider that there are sins and there are sins. An ordinary sin, whatever, you forgot the David Mincha or something or other, okay? This, right, it's wrong and so on and so forth, but okay. For this, he could go home, all right. But somebody who defied the Torah, you see, by marrying somebody who's not supposed to marry.
Forbidden to him,
So in that particular case, he should suffer the consequences and not be excused in the work of the service. This is what we had learned previously. Okay. But it could be also that at this particular point, he's trying to say something else. Another possibility is that, what he's saying is that they are sinners and therefore they should be excused from it. So that this we don't know yet how it's going to turn out. We'll see on the other side of the page that there will be a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi.
Isn't there a Isn't there an Aptorah where there was a general leading was asked to lead the Israeli army into battle?
Yeah.
And he was ostracized by the community. He was not. He was not. I mean, this before. Then he came and begged him to lead the army.
Oh, I know. You're thinking of Yiftach. Of course. Yiftach HaGiladi, right. He was ostracized not by the Israelis. Ostracized by his own
family,
half brothers,
family.
His own family. Well, they considered him an illegitimate member of the family,
yeah,
right?
Right.
That was even before the fact.
So
right.
he would not be allowed to go into battle, according to this.
According to this, but Bishat Hatzchak, when they needed him, they drafted him.
Yeah, right.
This
see,
whole thing is only right. By Mechemes Rishus.
Correct.
Mechemes
Mitzvah, right.
Nothing of that.
Yeah, we're coming to that. So we'll see. I mean, it doesn't mention Yiftach, but nevertheless, the general rule is there. That if it is in Mechemes Mitzvah, then in that particular case,
everybody,
even a person has to go to the bridal chamber or the gala. Of course, you ask, what is the gala doing? But the answer is, so she could supply food or something.
Yeah.
She could do her share, you know, to support the morale or help people who are experiencing. All right. Then, what does it say? So it says then, right? That it will come to pass when the Shotrim finish speaking to the people, then it says the focus of its voice below Shah, which probably the best translation is that they will appoint Soritz voice, they will appoint officers to lead them, Baroshalam, who should be at the head of the people who are fighting. Okay? Because to me there's another interpretation which is possible. Namely, that the focus of his voice, Baruch Shalom, could also mean that the generals or the officers in charge could also count how many troops they have and so on and arrange them, you know, for battle. So take a pick how you translate it, okay? But at any rate, after the Shotrim have finished speaking, so this is the point, you know, where they get ready for battle, right? And now we discover that whoever should have left has left, but if they haven't left, so now we learn as follows. Rakevo Shalom, literally at the heel of the people, in other words, at the rear of the army which is assembled on the battlefield, right? Ma'amidin Zakifin Mithnehem, Ra'achirim Ya'achareihem. All right, so first of all, they literally caused to stand, in other words, they set up people who are Zakifin. The question is, what are Zakifin? The answer is, they're Shtarke people. Right?
Gevirim.
Yeah, huh?
Gevirim.
Not Gevirim, rich people. You mean Gevirim?
Gevirim.
Right. Yeah, okay. Slight difference, okay. To some people, the fact that they're Gevir, that gives them Gevirim.
Gevirim.
Right. Okay. So these are guys, you know, who are strong, sturdy guys, okay, who stand behind them. And behind them, there are others who have the kashir and shofazel, these are like iron ledges in their heads, iron axes, ledges, whatever you want to say, but obviously they have something that they can beat them, right?
The
Cholham Bakesh Lavzor, whoever wants to return home at this particular point, meaning, you know, after those who had already been excused legally, but now if somebody
gets
the desire that he wants to go home,
to be
afraid. Okay? These Zakifin and the guys behind them, they have the power at this particular point to clap them over the thighs. In other words, you know, like the mafia, they can break their legs if they decide, you know, to quit the battlefield at this particular point. Doesn't say that they shoot them the way you know armies were doing. You know that.
Well, they didn't have guns in those days, right? Anyway.
Somebody was a coward; they shot him, right? But here, they do have the power to keep them in line to fight at this particular point by using physical force against them. Why? Because, as the Mishnah says, Shatchilas Nisa Nefila, which if we take it the way it stands right now, it means that the beginning of flight is Nefila. In other words, it leads to downfall. Okay?
It's
this is if we take it literally, but as we'll see, But in the Gemara, they say it should be just the other way around. That it should be that tefilas tefila, in other words, the beginning of downfall is light, it's nisam. All right, so I translate it first the way it stands here, and then as it's going to be corrected in the Gemara. Okay? And they quote a situation taken from the Tanakh, the Bible. Shneimar says, and this is taken from the first book of Shmuel, where, of course, the Israelites are fighting against the Philistines, and this was the time in which the Philistines were victorious and they captured the Ark of God, and of course Kophni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli the Kohen Gadol, were killed in battle and so on. Okay, so it's written over there, not see so elevated. See, it says over there that you know, somebody who was a palit, in other words, he had managed to escape from the battlefield, came and he was questioned by Eli as to what had happened and what was the result. And so he started to tell them about all the tragic news. And included in the tragic news was Nos Yisrael Bnei Plishtim, right? Israel had fled before the Philistines. The Gam Magefo Gedoylo Hoyeso Ba'am. And also there has been a great plague among the people. Ula Halanu over there. And then a little further on, it continues and it says, Vayonusu Yisrael Nifnei Plishtim Vayipu Kalom. The Israelites have fled before the Philistines and they have fallen slain. Alola, in this case, means slain, killed in battle. Okay? So we see what first happens. First is flight, right? Vayonusu. And then what is the next thing? Then by Yippo, they fall victims on the battlefield. Okay. Now, here comes the important proviso. Okay? Brother Mayor, I'll give you a chance to sit down for a moment. Okay, we're on Mem Dalet, on the space. Now comes a very important proviso that we had already mentioned previously. Says Banedavar Mamur, when does all this business take place? In other words, that we ask, you know, we give charge, you know, you haven't done this, and so on, you're excused from battle, and so on and so forth, and all the different things that we've learned in this chapter. All this is under what circumstances? The answer is Bimilchamos Horishus. Wars which are literally voluntary. Now, what do I mean by voluntary? So we'll see how the Gemara defines it. Okay? Avol, Bavil Chavos, Mitzvah, but when it comes to wars which Jews are commanded to fight, in that case, Hakol Yotzin, everybody has to take part in the fight and the war. Afilu Chosun Mechadro, the Kala Mechuposo. Even the Chosun has to leave his vital chamber, and the Kala has to leave the Kufa, and they have to do what they can do in order to help the war effort fight. Okay? Omar Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Babodavar Mamurim, he gives a slightly different interpretation. He says, what are we talking about? He says, the Milchamos Mitzvah, in wars of Mitzvah, that what? That they are excused, right? But Aval the Milchamos Chovah, but in obligatory wars, Hakol Yotzin, everybody then is obligated, you know, to fight. So obviously, the question is he going one step further, or not? So that the Gemara is going to discuss. Okay, because one of them says, right, the Chachamim say, Milchemes Rishus, that's when it takes place.
Voluntary war, we still don't know what that is.
Right. But Milchemes Mitzvah, then they have rights. Whereas he says, Milchemes Mitzvah, that's like what we call Milchemes Rishus. In other words, they can be excused, whereas Milchemes Chovah, an obligatory war, he says, that, but they cannot be excused.
We'll
see how we are.
Rishus and Chovah, that's the
right,
question.
Right, right. Question is, all right. So, Nora wants to know, first of all, my Ikob Bain Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. What is the practical difference between the interpretation of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, since in both cases they are talking about people who have sinned, and as a result of the sin, what should happen? They should go home, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was Rabbi Akiva, remember, who said Kimash Ma'ol. In other words, literally, if he's a coward, goes home, right? But what is the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? So he says, Ikam and Naihu are there at the Rabbanah. He says, the point of difference between them would be an Avera, which is only in violating something that the rabbis had ordained, but not something that the Torah has ordained. Okay? In other words,
you're talking about the sin.
The sin, exactly. Right. Okay, let's take a look at the Rashi. Avera de Rabbanah, it says Gemara, okay? The Rabbi Yossi Haglili says, in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, right? Afilu Ovar al Divrei Sofer, even if he had violated only something that the rabbi said was a sin, but not the Torah,
Choser.
He goes back home, okay? Well, Rabbi Yossi, but it was Rabbi Yossi's opinion, so Achiya Avora called the Bar Torah, it's only if he has violated a specific commandment of the Torah, dumyo, similar to what? The Almona Kain Godol, right? Uchigom, she nisoa, the Ikor Issa. Because if he has married her, then there is an Issa, and in that case, you know, he should not be excused, as we said before, okay? Although, according to others, another interpretation would say all the more so because he violated something like this. It's a worse sin than, you know, what Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, that if he simply sinned against the laws of the, you know, something that the
Rechav
ordinance. It's a difference of opinion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara asks the following question. It says, Keman Azlo, or the Tanya, says, in accordance with whose opinion would it apply in our particular case, a teaching that we learned that happens to be a Gemara in Menachos. Okay? Very important for us, by the way, because it's a practical halacha. It says, Soch ben filo mit filo avera hi viyodei vechozer olecha meyorche amilchoma. Okay. The original part is simply, first of all, softening tefillin. Tefillin is avera hibiyodei, which means the person puts on tefillin, okay, and he makes the bracha for the shel yad, and then he talks
between putting it.
Yeah, before he puts on the shel rosh, okay. Then in that particular case, he's a sinner. It says, okay, he's committing avera, okay. Of course, what are you supposed to do? So let's take a look at the Rashi. Okay, that's the next one over there. Sochi says Siper, which means that he spoke, right? It says Avera hu biyodei. It's an Avera. So Im lo chozar Avirach, it's a sin if he did not again repeat the bracha. So there should not be a hefsay, a pause in between, you know, making the bracha
for
Shel Yad as compared to the bracha for the Shel
Rosh.
So be a bracha v'atola, but nevertheless, we've also learned, remember last week we discussed, also, see, were you here last week?
I think so.
You weren't here. Alright, I discussed at that time again that, you know, we have different lavim. Okay? This, of course, goes right back again to what we learned when we studied Makos. Okay? That there are three different types of categories of love. Okay. One love, of course, now you know what I mean by love, a negative commandment that you're not supposed to violate. Okay. One love is a love which involves kores. Okay. So that is a very serious business, and of course, you know, that means that the Rebbeinu Shleiman is going to take care of you personally or something, or the Heavenly Court will take care of you personally, okay? And that, for example, is for people who have violated the laws concerning erva. In other words, either that they had intercourse with intimate members of the family, right? In other words, they committed incest, or even the erva is also, for a man, to have intercourse with a woman who is married. This is also erva, all right? So they are chayvei koretz, okay? That's the most serious violation of a law, okay? Next down the line is simply chayvei lavin. Torah says, for example, don't do this, okay? As for example, let's say Torah says, lo tzachtom cho b'disho, right? Don't muzzle the ox while he's busy, doing the treading and so on, because he's entitled to eat as he goes along, right? Saba b'chaim, exactly. Okay, you violate that, then what do you get? In that case, you're liable to malchus. I mean, this is the basic, to yoke two animals together, different types of animals.
Yeah.
Right. Shovah Hamor Yachdov and so on, okay?
Right.
These are cases where you get malchus for the violation. In fact, it could you could get malchus for a lot of other things too, but basically it's a violation. Okay. Then another type of a lav that we had was a lav haditak la'aseh. In other words, you have committed wrong, but nevertheless there is a way to rectify it. Lav haditak la'aseh. Right. As for example, there's a prohibition in the Torah against noso. Okay. Noso means that the sacrifice that you bring can only be eaten during a limited time frame. The Torah specifies different types of time frames, because in one case, let's say Pesach has to be eaten at that particular time, and after Chatzos, you're not supposed to eat it, okay? Becomes noso after that time. Or, Todah has to be eaten Yom V'Laila. In other words, you can sacrifice it during the day, eat it that day, and also that night as well. But what happens on the following morning when daybreak becomes noso, okay? Shlomim, you have shnei yomim v'layla echad. In other words, this day, that night, and then the following day also, but when nightfall comes, then in that case it becomes noso. But what is the law concerning noso? It's a violation.
Right.
But how can you rectify it?
You burn it.
You burn it, right. Noso has to be burned. So in that particular case, that's a lav hadita class, and there are other cases. So you ask me about this. This could be in the same category of a lav hadita class. You're not supposed to, according to Rashi, speak in between, or according to the Gemara, you're not allowed to speak in between the time that you make the bracha for the shalyad and the time that you make the bracha for the shel rosh. Okay. But what happened if you did speak in between? Then in that case, it would be an Adera, says Rashi, if you didn't make the bracha of the Shel Yad again before the Shel Rosh. Okay? All right, so that's the procedure. But we got to be careful because, while we're putting on tefillin, there may be other things that are attracting our attention. Maybe that we're greeting someone, which we shouldn't do while that person is putting on tefillin, or while we're putting on tefillin, we should not do. Or maybe even to respond to Kaddish, or to say Kaddish, in between one and the other. It's better to wait. Okay, it's better to wait and say Kaddish without putting on your tefillin than to do it, to put on the shel yad, let's say, and then say Kaddish, and then first you wind up with the shel rosh. Right. Yeah. Okay.
You can't even say a man.
No.
It would be interruption.
Yeah.
So that's wrong. Okay. All right. So we learned a very important law over here. Soch bein tefillah tefillah. So it's a very beyond it, right? But what the Gemara now adds is that the chozer alechem yochel mehalul chomer, because he has committed this avera. And after all, is this an avera midaraisa? Not really. It's really an avera the rabbanon. You understand?
Right.
The Torah doesn't say that if you talk in between, putting on the shel rosh, the shel yad, the shel rosh.
The Torah doesn't say that at all.
Well, it does. Shalt of the Yotzai Nefer, right? There are four similar passages.
Not specifically.
Correct. Okay. Because that too is an interpretation of it's required.
Right.
But certainly as far as, you know, interruption between brachas is already the Chachamim who said you're not allowed to do it. All right.
Disrespect.
Right. But according to this Gemara, even though you might consider this as not a serious Aveira, right? But nevertheless, the Chazer Alechem Yochem Milchoma, he is excused from the army, right? So, the question is, come on, whose opinion does this represent? So he says, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. It's Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion, because he said, whatever Aveira a person is conscious of and afraid of, then in that case he goes home. Right.
When you're going out, you're in a barrel, you get out of going through battle.
Right, right. All right. But as we see, we're talking, you know, about a war which is literally a voluntary war.
You know, we still haven't defined
that. We haven't really defined that quite yet. Right. Okay. now, Gemara says, Man Tana Lahor de Tana Rabbonim. Who is the Tana who says, let's say, is the author of the statement that we learned in the Mishnah, which says, Shoma kol kronos v'hirtia. The person heard the sounds of the horns, you know, that they were blowing in order to frighten the enemy. In this case, of course, would be the enemy blowing horns in order to frighten the Jewish armies, right? V'hirtia, he trembled, you know, when he heard it. Got frightened. Or Hagovas Trisen, he heard how they were knocking their shields together, made noise by knocking their shields, and he trembled. Or Tzichtuach Chorobos, Umayim, excuse me, Tzichtuach Chorobos. Or he also saw literally like the flashing or the polishing or the brandishing, take your favorite verb, okay, of swords. Obviously, you saw that they, you know, they were brandishing around. The reason why I say tzitzuach is polishing or shining, because this is the way they use it among people there in Israel today. Yeah, well, like with tzatzeach et hada'alayim, to polish your shoes, or tzatzeach et hashinayim, to polish your teeth, you know, to brush your teeth, you understand? So they use it for that. Okay. Yes.
Hirtia.
Hirtia, yeah. Hirtia. Yeah, right.
Hirtia.
You're right. Okay, yeah, good. But in this case, it's probably a little better to take it as an intransitive verb rather than a transitive verb. You're right, it could be. I mean, a hirtio could certainly be transitive. Usually it's transitive. Causes a different action to take place. But there are some uses of the hirtio where it's intransitive. All right, I'll give you an example. What is the meaning of the word hiskin? No, not his kin, but his kin. Zion Kuf Yud Nun. Who his kin? It means that he became old.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He became old. Right, right. So, in that particular case, you know, you can't say that that's a transitive verb, it's an intransitive verb. So, occasionally.
You don't know, say so, can't prove that you're right. You don't understand.
Okay. But you were thinking the word his skin, agreed. All right, that's also intransitive. After all, you agree with somebody, you don't agree something, you understand? You agree with someone. Right. So there are some times when it's used as an intransitive. Okay. And of course, we have to go always by what is the sense over here. Obviously, the sense is that it means, you know, that he became frightened. Okay, as the next little phrase will show us definitely. What does the next phrase say? Pumayim shoses in lo of Yaakov, right? Which means literally water, but it doesn't mean water, it means urine.
It means friends.
Yeah. And urine begins flowing, right? In other words, he involuntarily, he pees in his pants, is what we would say today. And
But according to others, it includes also the even stronger one of defecating
no,
in advance. Okay, in any case, I mean, if this happens, then in that case, chozer, no question, he goes home because he can't take babble fight. So it's kamam. Whose opinion is this? Lema Rabbi Akiva hi. Are we to say that this represents the opinion of Rabbi Akiva? Because what did Rabbi Akiva say? He says kamash ma'o, right? That means literally, you're afraid. So obviously this is a case of fear. No question about it. The Lo Rabbi Yossi Aglili. But are we to say that Rabbi Yossi Aglili stresses what? He stresses the idea of Avira. So that therefore we would say that does not represent his opinion. The person is so physically afraid that you know, he has this involuntary movement, loses his control. So they say the whole feel of Rabbi Yosef clearly might. In this kind of a case where a man shows this type of fear, even Rabbi Yosef clearly would agree. Mishum dechsiv, because the pasuk continues and it says what. The lo yimas is the vav echol kibbalo, that the heart of his brothers should not melt away, even as his heart is melting away.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the fear that he, you know, exhibits physically is contagious. Others will feel the same way. Exactly. Okay. And then it says, "Vahoyo ki chalos hashotim et aver elvam," and so on. Vaktu roshei atzoros. Okay. So he has to his plural choice. All right, so they ask the following question. Right? Remember it's set up above, top of the page, that what? That tchilat nis on the field, right? That the beginning of flight is the nefila.
Downfall.
Yeah, downfall, right. But you see, the problem that we have is in the wording, because it's not the beginning of flight is downfall, but rather downfall is the result by the fact that people begin fleeing. And this is what you know, the Chachamim and the Gemara they realize. So that therefore they say as follows. Hai mifnei shetchilas nisa nefila. The wording in the Mishnah is that mifnei, you know, shetchilas nisa nefila. He says mifnei shetchilas nefila nisa neboile. It should really say that the beginning of downfall is flight. That's the first thing. This is what it should be. This is what it should be. So Amor, so therefore, I mean, if this is the logical understanding, so we say Taka, okay. If Nation to Hilas the Pino Nisa. Okay. Alright. Now, final part of the mission, if you remember, tries to define the difference between Luchemis Rishus, right? Luchemis
Mitzvah,
as compared to Rabbi Yehuda, who says Milchemes Mitzvah versus Milchemes Chova. Alright. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Rishus the Rabbonon, Zui Mitzvah the Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, he says, look, where the rabbis use the word Milchemes Rishus, this is what Rabbi Yehuda calls Milchemes Mitzvah. Okay? Mitzvah the Rabbonon, and where they say, you know, that the war is a mitzvah, right? Then in that case, Zui Chovo the Rabbi Yehuda. This Rabbi Yehuda uses the expression Chovo to describe that. Okay. So now that we realize that they're both talking about the same thing, okay, so now we need an example. Omar Rava. So Rava comes with an example. What do we mean by the difference? Okay. And he says, Milchamos Yehoshua Lichbosh, right? The wars that Joshua had to wage in order to conquer Eretz Israel. So Divrei Yaakov, everybody is in agreement, is chova, that this is a it's an obligation. Jews had to, they were commanded to conquer the land, right? Alright, now Milchamos Beis David Nirvacha Divrei Yaakov Rishus. The wars that King David fought in order to expand the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, because who did he fight against? He fought against Ammon, Aram. So he wanted to expand the boundaries of Israel. So in that particular case, yeah, let's take a look at Rashi. Milchamah, they said, set the left hand on the top, halfway down over there. says Milchemes Beisdovid. You see, Shenilcham Aram Tzova. First of all, he fought against Aram Tzova. Aram Tzova is today, it actually would be Syria. Okay, he fought war against the Syrians. Lahosifal Eretz Yisrael, because he wanted to add it to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. What? The Hittites were long gone. They had disappeared a long time before that. Except, I know, I mean, you're thinking about Uriah HaChiti. Yeah, so he was about the only Hittite who was left at that time. Of course, we don't have any other mention of the Hittites at this particular point. Yeah, they had come, according to some, they came from Turkey, actually, and they conquered Eretz Israel. Yeah.
Lebanon used to be Syria.
Right.
Lebanon's creation after World War One, they give France,
modern,
they give France a foothold.
Modern Lebanon, modern Syria, right. But once upon a time...
It was part of the Turkish Empire.
Yeah, except that Lebanon normally meant the mountainous area exactly north of what Israel is. As a matter of fact, you know, some of it probably belonged to Eretz Israel because they speak about Nevel Hamas.
Yeah.
The question is only, what does Nevel Hamas mean? Okay. Pardon me? Had disappeared long before. Right. Yeah. But I guess he was a descendant of Hittite, so he had, you know, he was Hachiki, Uri Hachiki. Okay. All right. So, yes. So he fought a battle, he fought a war in Aram Tzovo in order to Eretz Israel, and also Mishor Sivivaseha, and some of the neighboring lands. As for example, Boav, Amon, what? The Halos called Mincho Masovet, because he exacted a tribute from them, and also Masovet. Masovet means, you know, let's say he took people to do work for him, and so on and so forth. Okay. So this is Milchemes Rishus. This is not a war that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam had commanded King David to do. King David decided to do this on his own. Okay? So that's why it's Milchemes Rishus. Ki plige, where is there a difference of opinion? It would be, for example, in the following situation. Lemi'ute of de kachovim de lo leise alayu. If, for example, you fought a war against idolaters, of de kachovim, let's say Goyim, okay, who want to destroy you, so you took a peremptory strike against them, so the question is, would this be a Milchemes Rishus, or would this be a Milchemes Chovah? Okay? You could point, for example, I mean, the business with the Six-Day War. The start of the Six-Day War was, if you remember, Israel decided not to take any chances because Nasser was threatening them, he's going to wipe them out, and the Arabs were chanting, you know, that they're going to push Israel and all Jews into the sea and everything else and so on. So he decided, why wait for them to get around to do it instead of to strike them first? So this would be equivalent, you see. And the question is, would you consider this a Milchemes Mitzvah or a Milchemes Rishus? Now, obviously, what would you think?
The Rishus was tensed, which turned into a Mitzvah.
Of course, Milchemes Mitzvah, no question. Right. Right.
Well, aggressive war is really not, I don't know whether we are allowed to
go. No.
Except for conquering the country.
Right.
Which, by the way, wasn't completed for many years.
Right.
They never completed.
Whether they never completed. Oh, yeah.
It's time to go. It's
over the middle.
Country,
they're
attempt to conquer the land. Those things
were still in
the Philistines.
Exactly. The question of Israel in the Six-Day War, there's no question that even though Israel actually started it, but nevertheless, it was perfectly justified.
The Egyptians started it because they blocked the Gulf of Aqaba.
Yeah, that's true.
They couldn't get any ships in there. That was a lifeline for Israel.
You're 100% right. They had engaged in all kinds of actions already, right? But the actual firing, you know, Israel fired first. Okay. But they were justified in doing what they were doing. So,
did you fire the first shot?
Yeah. So this is, you know, a milchama. Then the Marute Ode Kachab don't lay sealite, that they shouldn't come and attack them. Okay. So, at any rate, Mar Korelei Mitzvah, Mar Korelei Rishos. So, one of them, namely, of course, Rabbi Yehuda, he would say that this was a Nochemes Mitzvah, whereas the Chachomim would call this Rishos, because they still say, well, but you weren't, you know. But at any rate, is there really a practical difference? The answer is, in this case, there's no practical difference. So the Gemara wants to know, is there a difference? So he says, yeah, Nafka Mina. There is one area in which you could say that there's a difference between Milchemes Rishos and Milchemes Mitzvah. And that is, of course, a principle that we find again and again mentioned, that L'Oisek, the Mitzvah, Shepotem in a Mitzvah. If you're busily engaged in performing a Mitzvah, then you are, at the same time, you know, excused from having to form a different Mitzvah.
That's the reason behind
it. Right. So that, if we say that it was a Milchemes Mitzvah, right, then in that particular case, you are excused from doing some other things. Like, for example, let's say you don't have time to daven because you have to defend your life. I mean, it's obvious, okay? So,
how about the other way around? If right. He learns, it doesn't have, is the border from going to Milchemes Mitzvah?
It's what?
You can do use it the other way around, too.
Yeah, right.
If he performs with Mitzvah, he's
right,
excused.
Right, of course, no question. I mean, weren't there, you know, 20 Jews in Israel who said that our learning Torah is what has saved the Jewish people, right? Our learning Torah, our saying Tehillim, and so on, this is what has preserved us, enabled us to be. Okay, and he's lying on the ground, right? We have the picture so far, okay? So then there is a whole ceremony or procedure that has to be followed. It's written, V'yotzus keinecha v'shomtecha, right, that your elders, your judges have to go out, okay? With more to do, and they have to go and they have to measure to see which is the city which is closest to the victim. Right. And then in that particular case, then the Zakenim, the elders of that city, have to come out and they have to perform the ceremony of the Igla Rufo, of slaying the heifer, you know, by breaking its neck, right? And they have to say, Your Dedu the Shokras Adamazev, you know, right, our hands do not spill this blood. Nor did our eyes see, you know, this act that would have been performed. Okay. So now, this is the basis of this parak. Yes, David?
You know, all the times we've heard this, the first time of history, or maybe we'll get into this, what if they cannot say that? What if they can't say, you know, maybe we did cause this man to leave our city and he was exposed to the elements and he died? Then what is their punishment?
Okay. Their punishment is, of course, number one, a guilty conscience. Okay. Secondly, they would not perform the Egla Rufa.
Okay.
And then they would be punished.
Right. But we'll see other cases too where the Egla Rufa cannot be carried out. Okay. But nevertheless, if people have a guilty conscience, they have to do something about it. They have to do tshuva. They have to make sure that nothing like this would ever happen again. As we'll see.
The Egla Rufa itself is for the
tshuva. Right. So they'll have to say that if a stranger comes to us, we have to treat him kindly, and we have to be, generous with him, and so on and so forth, and not send him away without any escort, without any food, and things like that. And so, okay?
So
we have to accept responsibility.
There's no punishment.
Right. Right. Yeah. It did wrong. There's no question. It's an avera. Okay. How does it relate to Sota? We'll see in a second how it relates to Sota. Okay?
Okay.
The relation is the very first statement over there. It says Egla Rufo Bilashon HaKodesh, that the various declarations have to be in Lashon Kodesh. It has to be in Hebrew.
It goes back to the original.
It goes back to the original, right? Where Eloneh Morim Bechol Lashon, right? Where we had a whole series of things that can be said in any language, whatever, as compared to what? As compared to things that can only be said in Lashon Kodesh. The first example that they gave, of course, for any language that could be used was the Sota itself, that the Kohen has to address the Sota in the way that she understands what he's talking about.
Right.
You understand?
So that brought on the question of what
yeah.
can be said.
So that's exactly, that's what started it all. All right? So the last few chapters have dealt with things that either in any language or in Lashon Kodesh. Okay? All right. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Ki Motzei Cholol Ba'adomo, right? That if a slain victim is found on the ground, the Yotzei Zekeinecho Shoftecho, then your elders and your judges are to go out. So what does it mean, Yotzei Zekeinecho Shoftecho? So the Mishnah says over here, that means Shlosha Mebezdin Agonot Shukushimai No Yotzei. Okay? He says that three judges from the major Sanhedrin, the great Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, had to come and to do this. Okay? In other words, Zkeinech v'shoftecha doesn't mean simply any Zkeinim who had to come, you know, and do the measuring, but it means specifically three who were delegated
from
among the members of the Sanhedrin Gedolah in Yerushalayim. Okay? Remember that there were two Sanhedrins. One of them is Sanhedrin Gedolah, that's the one of 71 judges, okay, which met in the Lishkas HaGozis in the chamber of hewn stone in the Beis HaMikdash, okay, that was their place, that was the chamber where they met, okay. And then, in every city, which had a sizable Jewish population, they had a Sanhedrin Ketana, 23 judges, right, okay. So, you know, they would deal, for example, with capital cases. Person committed murder, so the Sanhedrin Ketana, in whatever city he was judged, I mean, they could decree capital punishment if necessary, or free the person. But they were the ones who dealt with that.
Right.
But the Sanhedrin Gedolah, beginning in the first chapter in Sanhedrin, it speaks about some of the powers that they had that only were delegated to Sanhedrin Gedolah, as for example. One of the powers would be, if the king decided that he wanted to make a war in Milchemes Rishus, he couldn't do it on his own. He had to first consult with the Sanhedrin Gedolah. If they gave the go-ahead, then it could happen. But if they refused, in that case, there was no Milchemes Rishus.
Really,
yeah. Like Congress, you know, let's say, theoretically has the power to to declare war on that, right?
Did
he have a there are various things, okay. So,
what
yes. Pardon me? All right. I mentioned, for example, to the declaration of war, all right? That the Milchemes Rishus have to be approved by them, together with the king, okay? Another case would be, for example, as we'll find mentioned very shortly, that if it is the Hosif Al Hohir Al Ha'azorah. If they want to increase the boundaries of the city of Jerusalem, there has to be a decision made by the Sanhedrin Gedolah. Okay? And the same thing would apply, let's say, if they wanted to expand the territory, the area of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Okay? So that had to be, that was in their province. Okay? Another thing would be tantamount to the Supreme Court of the United States. Namely, what if there are, you know, disagreements between the Bezdin of one Shevet as compared to a Bezdin of another Shevet? So they would have to adjudicate that. So these are just some of the things that, that they were empowered to do, okay? Which the lesser Sanhedrin did not have the authority to do. All right? So, the Mishnah then says that the Yotzei Zekeinecho Shoftecho, that what does it mean by this term? It says Shlosha Mebezdin Hagadol Shebirushalayim, or you Yotzei. They would go out in order to do the measuring and, you know, make whatever decisions are necessary. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says Chamisha. It's not three people that they need, but they need five. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Zekeinecho V'Shoftecho. But notice, Zekeinecho is a plural word. Your elders, right? Shoftecho is also a plural form, and your judges. So, inasmuch as plural. What is the minimum for plural? It's two. So he says, Zikenech implies two. Choftech implies another two, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then it says, and this is actually, you find the same thing in the Gemara Sanhedrin, it says, V'yein bezdin shokel. And we cannot have a court with an even number of judges. You have to be able to have a court which can make a decision. And the decision can only be made if you have a majority. Okay? So therefore, a bezdin, an ordinary bezdin, requires not two judges, but three judges, right? And in the case of Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation over here, it would require five, because he cannot have a bezdin shokel. Okay? The aim bezdin shokel, so therefore what? Mosifin aleihen odechad. Therefore, they add one more unto them. All right. Now,
could there
yes.
Could a judge abstain from voting in a bezdin?
Sometimes.
Then it's either you have an odd even number.
In that case, have a bezdin shokel. In that case, then you don't know how to decide the case. So they would have to add judges in order to try to determine. Okay? It's possible to add.
Then they have to try the case all over
again.
Yeah,
right. Of course, they took notes in the court. I mean, we learned in the Gemara Sanhedrin that you did have people, you know, who were recording the decision of this judge, that judge, pro, con, etc., what were the reasons, and so on and so on. So they did have court, you know, recorders or stenographers or whatever you want to call them, okay, that they had. And they could refer to notes. I mean, that was it. As a matter of fact, it was also in Marcus we had, they mentioned that also. But, you know, the primary source for that is, of course, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Okay? All right. Now, Mishnah says, Nimtzo, Tomun, Vagal, O Talui, Vahilon, O Tzofa, Bnei HaMayim, then Lohayu Ofin. What happens if the slain person that they find was, for example, hidden under a heap of rocks, heap of stones, that's what a gal is, okay? Or, tolui volium, they found him hanging on a tree. Or, sof al panei amayim, he was floating on the water. You know, it was a dead body floating in the water.
Drowned, you know.
Right. So in that case, lo hayokim, in that case, there was no ceremony of the eklavu. Shenemar, because it's written ba'adamah, right, in the, which means in the land, but on the ground. Let's say, I take it literally, it's on the ground, so it has to be on the ground, below tamun begal, right, and not hidden underneath a heap of stones. No fail. It has to be somebody who had fallen, that is fallen victim on the ground, but no, the load or lui, but not hanging be'ilon, right. But Soda says in the field, so in the field below Tzav al Pnei HaMayim, therefore that excludes, you know, that not somebody who is floating dead in the water, right? So,
what is the rationale to this?
The rationale is that they're interpreting very little. They don't want to have an egla arufa except in the most necessary cases.
Why?
So that
they're,
why not? Because, okay, first of all, it's a chap and a shot,
it's
a disgrace, you know, for the city itself, you know, that, that they have to go in to do this. Okay?
He mentions the Supreme Court will go to check every murder.
Right.
Well, I think that shows the importance that
they attach to human life. There's no question about that. Right.
Saying it could be interpreted as the case is such that they cannot possibly suspect anybody into computing for memory. Otherwise, it makes no sense to look for somebody. You can't find anybody.
Yeah.
There's no possible evidence.
But why would there be, logically, why would there be that distinction between someone that's found floating in a stream near a city as opposed to someone that's flying on the riverbank?
Okay, in that case, that's a very easy answer. How are they going to measure? I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to start to measure the water and see whether it's closer to this disease. That obviously can't be done. But as we see, they really want to cut down on the number of incidents
water, he may have
where the
Yagla
Rupa
would serve
on the Yagla Rupa is to be carried out. That's the basic reason, okay? Because it implies tremendous moral guilt on the part of the inhabitants of that city.
That's my point.
Especially the leaders, the elders of that city.
That's my point.
Okay.
Why do they make this artificial distinction? Why don't they search for guilt or innocence, no matter in what form the body is found? All right. I mean, perhaps
you might answer what they might have thought, but
assuming it was, let's say, in
Talmud. Okay. Well, but the answer is over there. The body was not obvious until they removed it. It's very difficult for us, to say what. But this is how they want to interpret literally each word where it says, right?
The only thing that comes to my mind, all these examples could be seen as where someone had perpetrated a murder and then brought the body to hide it.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility.
Put it under rocks.
Yeah, under the rocks. I mean, this would suggest itself. I mean, the idea occurred to me, too. Right.
Where if somebody just lies
prostrate,
he may
have
died of exhaustion. But I don't understand why they make a distinction as to where the body is found, as to whether undertake the search of responsibility.
Right.
It seems
official. I grant that. It's not indicated exactly why. But as you can see, they take literally each word in order to find, an area where the right of the Yagla Rupa would not be carried out. So, because, again, as I say, to me, I think that they're trying to preserve the dignity of the elders of the city and the community, the reputation of the community. Okay. Now, let's finish the Mishnah over here. We'll call it a night. Okay. Now, Nimtza. Somach l'sfar.
Nimtza.
Let's say the body is found, right, near the sfar. Sfar means the border, which is a dangerous place. Okay? Ola'ir sheruba ovdei kechavim. Or found in a city where the majority of the inhabitants are goyim, they're not Jews. All the Irsha in Bo Bezdin, or a city which doesn't even have a Bezdin in it.
Then
in that case, Lohoyu Orphin, right? Then they would not have, they would not have the procedure of the Egla Rufa. And then finally it says, Ein Modedin, Elo the Irsha Yesh Bo Bezdin. You can only have measurements to a city which has a Bezdin, because in the final analysis, it says, Modedu El Hoyir, and it mentions the fact that it's Kenecha v'Shoftecha, so that therefore a city should have a Bezdin if you're going to go through the ceremony of the Yagla Rupa. Okay, we'll call it a halt right now. Yes. And,
what did they do with these? If they did the Yagla Rupa, they, and they.